Okay, so today we have Will on the show, who is one of the lead analysts at AEI's Iran Tracker. We've had him on before, and today we're sort of continuing our previous conversation on Iran and Syria. I think this is it's I'm not going to say under discussed, but it's definitely something that we could use a lot more details and understanding. And so today Will will help us puzzle through sort of the latest issues. So our conversation today will open up with chemical weapons, sort of what are the views of people in Iran, of political players and different factions, and their sort of view of Assad using chemical weapons. And then sort of look at, for the second half of the show, what are the limits of Iran's, willingness to support Assad, either physically, financially, whatever, because this does seem, at least, to the casual observer, it does seem like a turning point, the use of chemical weapons. So let's start off with, well, give us a basic history, because I think, Iran is, if I understand history correctly, Iran is one of the few countries that has actually, in contemporary history, has suffered, has been the target of a chemical weapons attack. So give us a sort of brief history of sort of Iran and chemical weapons.
Well, I don't know that I'm able to necessarily give a precise history of those events, but I can say that Iran was, you're right, Iran was definitely a victim of chemical weapons during the Iran-Iraq War. It's a huge part of the legacy of the Iran-Iraq War, and it's something that obviously before the August 21st events in Syria, Iranian officials had discussed, at length. And any time, for example, that a victim of the chemical weapons attacks of Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq War died in Iran, because there are still victims, of course, in Iran that are living to this day, it was a big deal, and they would use it as an opportunity to say that this awful, attack happened, and the world really stood by and did nothing. So it's certainly a part of the legacy of that war, which is a huge part of the legacy of the Islamic Republic. So they view themselves as, one of the most, you could say, I guess, egregious, that was one of the most egregious chemical weapons attacks in modern history, which indeed it was, and the world really stood by and did nothing. So this was a part of the political discourse, the ideological discourse of the Islamic Republic leading up to what happened in Syria.
Interesting. So, I mean, sort of walk us through, I mean, what has been the various factions and their sort of response to Syria's use of chemical weapons. I mean, is there, are there sort of splits, or has it been a sort of uniform message?
Well, the messaging has been really interesting. I mean, for someone who spends a large part of his working time watching and tracking Iranian messaging, this has been extremely interesting. And it hasn't been necessarily as I've expected, and there certainly has been some fracturing. The Revolutionary Guards Corps and its leadership has been really, relatively, muted and mild in its response. It's framed it as a U.S. media propaganda campaign, an excuse to attack Syria with an ultimate result of attacking Iran, but hasn't really been as forward-leaning as I might have expected in the type of response that Iran or the resistance or, the Quds Force and its proxies might give to an attack. With that said, there's also, another camp or a group of people who has been even maybe even mild isn't the right word, but for example, President Rouhani seems to, be leaning toward rhetoric that suggests that Iran will continue to support Syria, will continue to support Assad, but Assad, fundamentally made a mistake. Now, the messaging has gone back and forth a little bit, and it's muddied, and the degree to which that's influenced by other people is unclear. But the Rouhani camp and his foreign ministry seems to be tiptoeing around the issue a little bit more carefully, and primarily condemning the use of chemical weapons in general, and then pointing to the fact that the United States, the international community, did nothing when Saddam Hussein was attacking Iranians and Iraqis with chemical weapons in the Iran-Iraq War and afterward. And then, of course, there were the statements by, or the alleged statements, I should say, by Expediency Council Chairman and former President Ayatollah Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, in which he said that, again, allegedly said that the Syrian government, the Assad regime, was responsible for the chemical weapons attack, which is, of course, unheard of in the Islamic Republic's discourse of all these events, and there has been some fallout from that. So there have certainly been some divisions, but what I haven't picked up is that Iran is really stepping back its support of Assad. I mean, the way that they have to, or the way that they have decided to, or at least some individuals within the regime have decided to approach the issue, has varied, I think, for domestic political reasons and for foreign policy reasons. But I don't get a sense that they're drawing back from Assad, that they're saying that this event will in fact cause us to change our attack list on Assad or to fundamentally rethink our relationship with the Assad regime.
So, sort of walk us through. I mean, why is that? I mean, is then no. Let me phrase it this way. Is the chemical weapons? I mean, the chemical weapons use sort of pushing on Iran's ability to support Assad, or how do we interpret, the not only the use of chemical weapons, but sort of its political effect in Iran. I mean, if it's sort of caused, just very much muddying of messaging and sort of, not necessarily a debate, but definitely going back and forth and sort of, shaking their fist at chemical weapons use.
Yeah, that's a difficult question because of the extent to which Iran is involved in Syria. I mean, we've heard, or I should say, I've heard, from sources that Iranian figures within the IRGC, the Quds Force, are heavily involved in the strategic decision making at the uppermost levels in Syria. So when something like this happens, that you question the extent to which, not necessarily which Iran is involved, but if they have set upper limits within which that chemical attack fell. Which I don't mean to suggest that Iran was involved in any way, but it's difficult to sort of get at the question that you're asking when leading up to this, some of the assessments have been that, Iran hasn't even been involved at the strategic level in which something like this might fall into. But on the other hand, and I think the journalist Laura Rosen put it really well on Twitter, was that, Iran looks at this as a mistake, fundamentally, because they didn't seemingly need to do something like this, and that's sort of cold realist thinking. But the chemical attack was not something that the Assad regime needed to do in its military operations in order to be successful in what it's trying to achieve, at least in the view from afar. So the rhetoric that I'm seeing indicates, I think, that there's a discourse even in the uppermost levels of the regime in which they're saying that, this was, a mistake. Why would you do this? You're bringing too much attention to the international community. Now you're looking at possible intervention from the United States, and you have us, the Islamic Republic, put in a very difficult position because we are sort of the, most staunch advocates against something like this because of their being victims of chemical attacks during the Iran-Iraq War. So it put them in a very difficult position. But at the same time, I don't see it as, again, I'm getting back to it as I was concluding with earlier, as something that's going to really fracture the relationship with Assad. It certainly has complicated things, obviously, but and added new variables to the sort of equation that makes up their very complex relationship. But I don't see them as looking at this as something that is forcing their hand in any way to say, all right, we have to kind of cut loose here, that's just not going to happen.
So I'm sort of curious then. I mean, it seems like, they might be on the same page. I think we agree there, but I mean, it seems like with the Assad regime, they're willing to, the Assad regime is in a fight for its survival, whereas Iran could, is not necessarily in a fight for its survival. Or, I mean, is, how does Iran sort of, conceptualize Assad? I mean, it seems like, is the fight for Assad also a fight for survival for Iran, or is there sort of a depth there to where, the costs become so high for Iran and being militarily involved, that they'd be willing to, either none of, either cut off Assad, that's the extreme conception of it, or even limited support to Assad.
No, that's a really good question. No, you're right. I don't think that Iran views the conflict in Syria as, synonymous with the, some kind of, fight for the survival of the Islamic Republic, at all. But what I think that, the sense that I get is that this is viewed as a huge strategic issue for Iran, and that Syria truly does provide Iran resistance, Hezbollah, the IRGC, with strategic depth and a deterrence that really they cannot achieve without, having a strong ally in Syria. So from that angle, it's not whether this doesn't mean that if, for example, things go so terribly for Iran, Assad falls, Iran loses all influence, Iran loses all access, that it's game over. The Islamic Republic, the regime as we know it, ceases to exist. But it's a big blow. It's a large blow, and I think that their rhetoric, their actions reflect that, and their relationship with Syria up to this point is such that one would expect such a reaction. So in that sense, it's not a fight for survival, but it is a fight for the future of the Islamic Republic, and are certainly groups, individuals, factions that are going to continue to fight very hard to ensure that that future means Iranian access, Iranian influence in Syria. But you're right, there is a question of whether there's an upper limit as to how far Iran will go in supporting Assad. If Syria, or excuse me, if the United States intervenes in Syria and it significantly shifts the balance of power towards the Syrian opposition and Iran, in order to see Assad continue to stand as the leader of that country, has to do something more drastic. Are they willing to do that? That's a great question. I mean, there's a number of different factors, least of which is the new president's attempts to really broker some kind of deal with the United States, with the West, with the P5 plus one, to get sanctions lifted and to get the Iranian economy back on track and to bring some sort of resolution to the Iranian nuclear program and those negotiations.
I'm sort of fascinated by this regional implication because, I think up till now, the United States hasn't been really, I don't know how to characterize it, but it hasn't really been politically involved in Syria, but rather, just arming, giving money and aid, as opposed to being sort of, willing to take it to the next political level and the next strategic level. But, with the use of chemical weapons, it seems like the United States has decided to do something about Syria. And I think the response to it from Iran has been, I'll post the story when I post this episode, but, it was, if I understand it correctly, they had threatened or had picked up an intercept that Iran, in the case of a strike, would have proxies in Iraq attack the U.S. embassy. So I'm sort of curious then, how has this sort of new U.S. involvement or, focus on Syria, how will this and how has it affected sort of the thinking in Iran, in regards to the United States?
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, the U.S. has focused on Syria, and for the past year or so, there's been a lot of debate about what the U.S. should do. And they're, apparently, as the administration tells it, they have been arming the Syrian opposition. Of course, they've been providing them with humanitarian aid. But there's no question that Iran has also been involved for some time now, and that has escalated incrementally. Not in response to foreign influence, not in response to, the United States intervening or the West intervening, but perhaps maybe in response to some Gulf countries providing additional support. But Iran has been escalating its support in that country for some time now, with the U.S. involved. So it's difficult to say necessarily that Iran is shifting the way that it's thinking about supporting, Assad, because I think at this point, there's a crisis point, an inflection point, where if this happens, this is going to require some decision in that they have sort of, you might say, boxed themselves in rhetorically, although they, you know, one is always able to move around those borders, by suggesting that any sort of U.S. intervention is going to require an Iranian response, whether that's in the form of Iraqi Shia militant proxies, Lebanese Hezbollah, or an Iranian direct military response. I don't think that would be a direct confrontation from Iranian military forces. That's simply not necessarily within the doctrine of, you know, specifically the Revolutionary Guard Corps. You mentioned the reported intercept of Quds Force Commander Qasem Soleimani ordering Iraqi Shia militants to respond to attacks in Iraq by attacking the U.S. Embassy. That certainly is more plausible. I mean, we even see another report today where Asai Bahal Haq and Qatayb Hezbollah, or at least the former, perhaps not the latter, but AEH leaders saying that they are preparing to respond to a U.S. attack on Syria. And that certainly is within the doctrine of the Revolutionary Guards Corps and the Quds Force. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that kind of response. So again, I don't think that this has necessarily shifted Iran's strategic approach to Syria, Iran's strategic approach to the region. In fact, this really aligns with what they've been doing for some time now, which is responding, being proactive through its proxies and covertly, clandestinely, in such a way that it doesn't necessarily or obviously lead back to the uppermost levels of the Islamic Republic regime in such a way that it could prompt a response from the U.S. or from anyone else who impacted by the response.
So I want to, for the last bit of the show, sort of change gears and ask, you know, does Syria, I mean, are there ripple effects from the conflict in Syria in other parts of Iranian foreign policy, particularly the nuclear effort? I mean, it seems like with Rouhani, he's been able to sort of, you know, take the portfolio away, the nuclear portfolio, and put it at the foreign ministry. And, you know, I mean, and, you know, there's other cues that, you know, Rouhani and Zarif want to sort of, you know, I won't say opening, but a sort of willingness to talk and negotiate over the nuclear program. So, I mean, are we seeing ripple effects and, you know, can we possibly see a change from, you know, Iran's foreign policy in Syria and have it affect Iran's sort of nuclear policy?
Yeah, that one is an extremely complex question, and I think I mean, there are certainly others out there who talk or speak to this issue much better than I can. But you're absolutely right. I mean, as Rouhani, Zarif, that administration works hard to really try to bring some resolution to the nuclear issue, to put a different face, one might say, on the Islamic Republic regime. I mean, he's certainly, the way he has approached his public diplomacy is very different than the previous administration. They're interconnected, absolutely. And for all we know, and this is absolutely speculative, but I have to imagine that when P5+1 negotiations resume with the Islamic Republic, that Syria is an item that's on the agenda, if not publicly. Who knows, perhaps that they completely keep that off the table in order to keep negotiations going forward. But I think that in order for nuclear negotiations to succeed with Iran, that Syria is going to be an issue that they have to address, because at this point it seems inevitable, and you know, that the U.S. is going to intervene in some way. The limits of it are still in question. But when that happens, Iran is going to, of course, see its strategic interest threatened, the U.S. as well, if there is any sort of response, direct proxy or otherwise. So I think that the two could possibly converge as we're moving forward. And I don't think that that's necessarily a desire for Iran. I think that, you know, particularly for the Rouhani administration, who looked relatively strong. strong coming in terms of his ability to really bring a positive, new, constructive approach to negotiations. With the conflict in Syria escalating, this, I think, really undermines his efforts. We see, I think, more hardline currents, particularly those associated with the Revolutionary Guard Corps, empowered by this because it's something that really resonates with a certain sector of the regime, and it certainly resonates with any ideological pillar of the Islamic Republic, and that being resistance and the support for Hezbollah and the access to resistance in Syria. So I think it's complicated by that, it's muddied by that, but there's also an opportunity there that if the, again, I'm always reluctant to tread into policy issues. I'm more kind of in the weeds, intelligence analysis. But if the U.S. is maybe willing to broach the subject of Syria, or really more so than broach the subject, I guess, really sort of get into it with Iran about Syria and how we can get toward a political resolution, since both sides have been very vocal in saying that this is ultimately what they want. Both the Obama administration recently in saying that they don't seek to topple the Assad regime, they seek a political resolution. And Iran being very vocal in that they think that the only solution to Syria is a political, not a military solution. So in that, they have some shared interests. So perhaps there's a way for those two things to, though they may be complicated, to actually bring some fruitful results. That's, of course, very optimistic thinking, I guess you could say, but it's also, I think, realistic and a possibility.
Interesting. Is there, I mean, let me sort of, look at the question this way. I mean, has Syria sort of exacerbated, domestic political divisions? I mean, in the sense that, I mean, it seems like, from reading sort of the statements on Iran Tracker and then Iran Pulse, I mean, it seems like the Quds Force and the IRGC seem very willing and gung-ho in their public statements, at least, about, supporting Syria to the end, where it seems like these, coming from the Rafsanjani camp and the Rouhani camp, and, even if we sort of combine that with Zarif's sort of public diplomacy, I mean, it seems like, there's just, one faction wants to, be involved in this conflict very much so, and it doesn't matter what the, the optics are, what image it gives to the West or whatever, but you have this other faction that definitely wants to, I'm not gonna say open, but definitely putting their hand out. So, I mean, in terms of that, is that sort of creating a domestic political tension, or is it, really one hand is doing one thing and the other hand is doing another thing?
That's sort of the eternal question, I think, with Iran really. But I don't think it's necessarily exacerbating those fractures. I think they're there. And I think they were evident during the election. They were evident post-election. And so I think that a lot of camps have really tempered their rhetoric. It's pretty clear that those fractures still exist. But you're right, it has created some domestic political tension in that, on the one hand, you have someone like the IRGC commander being very vocal about, I guess being hostile, you might say, about a U.S. attack on Syria, and then you have the Rouhani Zarif camp being more diplomatic, as you might expect, in criticizing the, what the U.S. intends to do, or may intend to do, and the attack itself. That is maybe to be expected, but it still creates complications domestically, because as Rouhani moves forward and does attempt to pursue negotiations, and as he comes to the United States to address the United Nations General Assembly, I mean, these are things that he's going to bring with him. I mean, as the United States reports what the Revolutionary Guard Corps and senior leadership is saying about Iran's role in Syria, Iran's response to Syria, that's baggage that he carries with him. So whether or not it actually impacts in a substantial way Iranian policy, it is still something that, is part of what It's sort of part of the package now as they go forward. This is something that they can't avoid talking about because there's clearly very powerful, influential elements within the regime that are intending to continue to support Assad, are intending to, respond to a potential U.S. strike on Syria. And then there are those in Iran, in the Rouhani administration, and elsewhere that would like to see Iran, temper its role in such a way that they can resolve the issues that are fundamentally most impactful on the Iranian domestic economy and political and social scene, I guess you could say. So there are going to be, I think, conflicts, buttings of heads going forward, but that's not unusual, and I think that's sort of at this point kind of built into the structures and the dynamics and divisions that exist in Islamic Republic.
Interesting. So, before we end the interview, we always like to give the guests the last word, last comment. What did we leave out? What did you want to add in? Go ahead.
Well, thanks. I guess first I want to say thank you for having me back on again. It's always a pleasure. But other than that, I think that I would only, I guess, as people consider this issue, that they continue to be, I guess, realistic about the players involved and the both the humanitarian and the political stakes, and be diligent in their in their efforts to consume as much information as possible and get a clear picture. Vague, yes, but I think good advice anyway.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
All right, thank you, Sina.
Sure, thank you.